headlines for this hour. Iran's leader tells the visiting Sultan of Oman that regional countries should be aware of the Israeli regime's divisive policies. Sudan's warring rivals agreed to a five-day extension of the country's shaky truce after heavy clashes rocked the capital, Khartoum. North Korea confirms it will launch a reconnaissance satellite next month to monitor the military activities of the US and its partners in real time. Thank you for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says all-out expansion of ties with Oman will benefit both countries. Ayatollah Khamenei says Tehran and Muscat should continue their negotiations with seriousness to get tangible results that lead to expanded relations. The leader made the comment in a meeting with visiting Sultan of Oman, Haytham bin Tariq. Ayatollah Khamenei also underlined the significance of increased cooperation between Iran and Oman, seeing how they share what he called the very important Strait of Hormuz. The leader also warned about the risk posed by Israel in the region, saying the regime and its supporters seek discord amongst regional countries. Ayatollah Khamenei also hailed the Iranian government's efforts to improve relations with regional countries, including Saudi Arabia. He noted that Iran is also open to the restoration of ties with Egypt. Earlier during the meeting, the Sultan of Oman said Egypt was willing to restore diplomatic ties with Iran. He also said Muscat seeks closer cooperation with neighboring countries, especially Iran. Sayyid Mohammad Marandi is a university professor and political analyst. He puts into context the Omani Sultan's visit to Iran.
Iranian-Omani relations have always been good, and cooperation has always existed at very different levels, both political and economic ties. And Oman wants to become a hub for business as well, and Iran is an ideal partner. But I think after the rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the changes that are taking place across West Asia and the Persian Gulf, the Saudis rethinking their ties with Syria, negotiating with Yemen, and the potential for the formation of a government in Lebanon, along with other changes that we see between countries in the Persian Gulf region, small countries that have been under the sway of Saudi Arabia. These changes together, I think, bring about a new era for our region. And Oman, having this very good relationship with Iran, stands to benefit a lot from these changes.
Iranian national Hamid Nouri continues to linger in Swedish jails in conditions which his lawyers have described as appalling. Nouri's lawyers have questioned his trial process and criticized the way he's being treated in jail. They say he's been held in solitary confinement for more than 3 years now. Nouri is prevented from visiting his family members. They've also slammed Swedish authorities for denying Nouri access to documents crucial for his defense. Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Stockholm in November 2019. Swedish prosecutors accuse him of involvement of or in the execution of members of the Mujahideen Khalq organization. That's a terrorist group responsible for killing at least 12,000 Iranians. Tehran has rejected the accusations against Nouri as politically motivated. The head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting has called on cultural assemblies of the resistance front to launch a new movement to portray various dimensions of Palestinians' resistance against the Zionist regime. Peyman Jebelli made the proposal while meeting with the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, in Lebanon. The IRIB chief highlighted the recent heroic victories of the Palestinian people that he believes exposed the increasing vulnerability of the Israeli regime. And Nakhala, for his part, said the resistance has changed the equations on the ground in his favor, shattering Israel's dream of being a superhero in the region.
RIIB chief, Iran's national broadcaster, Peyman Jebelli, is on an official visit to Lebanon, where he has met top officials. A meeting with Lebanon's culture minister was seen by both figures as significant in order to boost bilateral cooperation on all levels, especially in the cultural sector.
As we had together faced the threat of military war, we together must face together in collaboration this cultural war, this war that intends to distract our awareness of what in real is happening in the region.
The highlight of the trip was a tour to towns in southern Lebanon. Head of the IRIB told reporters as he overlooked occupied Palestine that the resistance has recorded a historic achievement after inflicting the heaviest defeat on the Israeli regime when it was forced to withdraw from Lebanon. But this victory is something that needs to be honored and protected by the media.
We, the media, with our role to narrate these stories of heroic stances, victories, and highlight the significance of what occurred, have a huge responsibility. A military operation would be limited in space and time, but the job of the media needs to persist in all places and at all times. My presence here as head of the IRIB, and in this town of Marun Aras, which overlooks occupied Palestine, is a symbolic and hopefully practical statement of unity and joint efforts with our brothers in the media of resistance.
IRIB CEO told Press TV that this visit is aimed at strengthening the unity and cooperation among media outlets which support the resistance.
As part of the effort to form, as in the military field, the resistant groups could do a coordinated effort and form the coordinated operation rooms. High on agenda was that to form the same unity among the resistance media. So as part of that, he had meetings with high-ranking Lebanese officials and people in the resistance groups.
Mr. Jebelli had met earlier with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, who discussed some new and bright ideas on ways to cooperate with all resistance media, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. During their meeting, the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting and Hezbollah Secretary General both stressed the need to strengthen other facets of resistance, namely to confront the mass media campaign, which targets the people of the region. Maryam Saleh from Marun Aras, South Lebanon.
A ceremony has been held in the Iranian capital to pay tribute to outstanding scientific achievements and contributions. During the event, the country's most prestigious scientific award was handed out. Our correspondent Gisumi Shahmadi was at the ceremony for more details.
The Order of Knowledge, as it has been dubbed. Now, this is the highest award that any scientist in Iran can be awarded with. And, of course, it is the first time after the Islamic Revolution that this award is being given to scientists in different fields. I'm in the middle of the ceremony where scientists are being called upon stage to be awarded the Order of Knowledge. As I told you before, it is a very important occasion, not just for the scientists themselves, Marzia, but also for their students and people who have been following scientific achievements in Iran, this is actually more a motivation for those students and people who are working in scientific fields, doing research, knowing that what they do will be acknowledged. And of course, I have to tell you that there are 12 awards that are going to be given to 12 of the professors in different science fields. These people have been chosen after a short list of 100 professors from across the country.
Now we have discussed the ongoing Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in our news review program. Here's more.
And now it's time for this hour's news review. Palestinians hold a funeral for a man killed by Israeli forces during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. 37-year-old Ashraf Mohammed Ibrahim was shot while confronting the storming of Jenin by occupation forces. Another Palestinian succumbed to his injuries sustained in an Israeli raid in Al-Khalil 2 days ago. And earlier today, regime forces also raided a village near Ramallah, wounding 2 more Palestinians there. The regime has intensified its crackdown across the occupied territories in recent months. Nearly 150 Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli attacks in the West Bank so far this year. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review. First, Mona Kandil out of Ramallah, and Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadoun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Mona, can you fill us in on the latest and what has taken place today?
We have to mention that Ibrahim spent 11 years behind bars, and then he was released. He was an officer of the Palestinian Security Forces, according to the Palestinian Authority. It's not clear whether Ibrahim engaged in direct clashes with the Israeli forces or not. However, the Israeli military issued a statement saying that its troops came under fire during the raid to Jenin City, and that they wounded 8 Palestinians. One of them was in serious condition. 6 others were arrested by the Israeli forces in Jenin. The Israeli soldiers seized with them from Jenin the weapons and other military equipment.
Thank you, Mona. Well, Charlotte, I mean, already the Palestinians basically are living in this hell that Israel has created. And now it's even hell on top of hell as they exacerbate these attacks. What's going on? Why do we see the regime? I mean, on a daily basis, unfortunately, we're reporting about more and more Palestinians being killed. Why are we seeing this at this time?
Unfortunately, I mean, the Zionist regime, since its inception in 1948 and before, has always followed a policy of attempting to eliminate the Palestinian people from the land of Palestine by all means, including, you know, by direct force and violence, through extrajudicial killings, through the confiscation of land, the demolition of houses, and all of that for over 75 years has failed to break the resistance of the Palestinian people. But what we also see is that whenever there is a growth in resistance, the Zionist regime is dedicated to wipe that out. It wants to just absolutely suppress Palestinians from struggling for their freedom and struggling for their liberation and struggling even for their most basic rights. And so in an attempt to crush that resistance, we see these brutal raids taking place night after night, the invasion of houses, the explosion of doors from people's homes, the demolishing of homes that are owned by entire families in order to impose collective punishment on a Palestinian prisoner. All of this is an attempt to erase and suppress the resistance of the Palestinian people that the Zionist regime has been unable to do for 75 years.
Well, thank you both for being with me on this news review. Mona Kandu out of Ramallah, Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadoun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver.
The U.S. and Saudi Arabia say Sudan's warring factions have agreed to a five-day extension of a fragile ceasefire deal. The mediators said the original ceasefire deal, which was signed on May 20th, allowed the delivery of humanitarian aid despite repeated violations. They said the extension will permit further humanitarian efforts. Heavy clashes and airstrikes rocked the Sudanese capital on Monday as the ceasefire came to an end. Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have been locked in a power struggle that erupted into conflict on April 15th. Hundreds of people have been killed and nearly 1.4 million people driven from their homes. The UN says a record 25 million people are in need of humanitarian aid and protection in Sudan. North Korea says it will launch its first military reconnaissance satellite despite Japan's threats to shoot it down. Pyongyang did not specify the exact launch date, but said it needs the satellite in June for live monitoring of U.S. military activities in the region. The U.S. and its regional ally South Korea began their latest joint military exercises last week to simulate what they called a full-scale attack from North Korea. Earlier, Japan vowed to shoot down any projectile threatening its territory. Tokyo and North Korea's potential missile launch would be a serious violation of UN Security Council resolutions. It urged Pyongyang to refrain from the launch. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell says he's not optimistic about the events in Ukraine during the summer. He predicted a new military offensive by Russia. Borrell noted that Moscow will not sit at a negotiating table without first trying to win the war in Ukraine. The EU's top diplomats stressed the need to increase military spending to respond to the military challenges facing Europe. He added that Russia's military presence in Ukraine is enormous. Borrell also urged more help for Ukraine to defend itself in the war with Russia. Moscow has time and again warned the West that military aid for Ukraine will only prolong the war. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thank you for listening.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
these are
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me.
Regular boarding will begin in
thank God. The flight's gate is still open. I am now at the airport and I'm late as always. I'm going to travel to the holy city of Mashhad in order to go on a pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza on his birth anniversary. I'll pray for you. The holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, is located in Mashhad, Khorasan Razavi province, northeastern Iran. This shrine has long been by far the most visited religious destination in Iran, attracting millions of domestic and international pilgrims each year. The holy shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad is a complex which contains the mausoleum of Imam Reza, peace upon him, the 8 infallible era of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Also contained within the complex are the Goharshad Mosque, a museum, a library, 4 seminaries, a cemetery, the Razavi University of Islamic Sciences, a dining hall for pilgrims, vast prayer halls, and other buildings. Imam Reza's holy shrine is the most significant element giving identity to the urban area of Mashhad. The spiritual tradition of pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, has been registered on the National Intangible Cultural Heritage List by Iran's Ministry of Cultural Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts. I am in my hotel room. I had a nice flight and it feels great to be here in this spiritual atmosphere. This is one of my special trips ever. It's unique because it's more a spiritual one. To make a pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him. 2 days later, it happens to be the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, so I chose this date for my trip. You know, every year on the occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, Mashhad gets brimmed over with so many domestic and foreign pilgrims. It's worth it being here, though. So I take a little rest and then I get ready to go on a pilgrimage to the holy shrine. I've caught a taxi to the holy shrine of Imam Reza. This city is full of positive energy. The shops are open until late at night, selling special souvenirs of Mashhad. Everything is lively in this city. Golden Dome Shrine is appearing. Assalamu alaikum, Ya Ali ibn Musa Reza. I can't believe I finally reached here. Thank God. It's so beautiful in here. On the occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, peace upon him, the holy shrine is decorated with flowers and colorful lights. It's so great. More than 300,000 flowers donated by flower growers throughout Iran have been used to decorate the holy shrine. And the flag of the dome of the holy shrine of Imam Reza will change on the anniversary of his birth. Ceremonies of the day of the birth anniversary include poetry reading and performances, and being covered live by Iranian national TV and social networks of the Holy Shrine during the ceremony. Here you can see people from all walks of life, from different Iranian cities and even different nationalities. Arabs, Indians, Africans, from all over the world. They all have come here to pay homage to this peerless personality, to Ali ibn Musa Reza, peace upon him. I'd better talk less and start reciting the special salutation of Imam Reza, peace upon him.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa Reza al-Murtada. الإمام التقي النقي وحجتك على من فوق الأرض ومن تحت الثرى يا الصديق الشهيد صلاة كثيرة تامة ذاكية متواصلة متواترة مترادفة كأفضل ما صليت على أحد من أوليائك.
Actually, I don't change any place in the world with this patch of paradise. Much has been said about the good morals of Imam Reza, which is a lesson for us. For example, he never hurt others with his words. He did not interrupt anyone while speaking. He helped the needy a lot. He always had a smiling face. He never laughed with a loud voice. He always visited the patients. He was patient as well, and etc. These were just a few examples related to this personality, and there are many lessons for us to learn. Heartiest congratulations on the auspicious birth anniversary of Imam Reza. Peace upon him.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends. And how about beginning the day with a saying from Imam Reza, peace upon him, the Prophet's eighth infallible heir. The evilest of people is that who deprives others of his aid, eats alone, and lashes his bondman.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the physical and spiritual adornment. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the physical and spiritual adornment in the Islamic lifestyle. In the Islamic lifestyle, obviously, when we want to have an Islamic lifestyle, it is necessary to adorn ourselves physically and spiritually. Now, when we talk about the physical adornment, there are specific things which are very much emphasized in the Islamic teachings. Number one is to be in the state of wudu, or having a ghusl, bath. And you know that there are different types of bathing. For example, the ghusl of the day of Jum'ah. There are other ghusl in order to keep ourselves clean. And one of the conditions of entering the prayer or performing the daily prayers is to be in the state of purification, in the state where we wash our hands, our mouth. What does it mean? It means like we are cleaning ourselves, we are adorning ourselves, we try to beautify ourselves. On the other hand, it is said that a mu'min or believer must have the clean clothes on him with the light colors like the white color or the green color. So these are the colors that we need to use in clothing, the light color clothing and not the dark ones. And then after that, what we see is to use perfume, to put on a good perfume. It is also recommended in the Islamic teachings when it talks about the physical appearance, physical adornment, and also to use a mirror. Now, having a mirror with myself, carrying a mirror and keeping myself clean and neat and clean, it is necessary in the Islamic teachings. And that's what we see, that in different narrations, these are the things that are the most, we can say, emphasized in the Islamic teachings. Therefore, it is necessary to have these things in our life and to teach this to our kids so that when they are raised, inshallah, we raise them with the physical adornment. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the physical and spiritual adornment in the Islamic lifestyle. For the physical adornment, we gave some examples that is being emphasized in the Islamic teachings. But on the other hand, when we talk about adornment, when we talk about titivation, Islam gives importance to the spiritual adornment as well. The spiritual adornment is that we need to have a good manners. We must deal with people with good manners. We must be having a good ethics, inshallah. And whereas we have the good appearance, on the other hand, we should have the good spirituality as well. And it is said by Imam Ali alayhi salam, al-jamalu al-zahiru husnu surah, that the beauty of the apparent beauty is that you look good, you are having good clothes, your hairs are combed, you look good, you have a good appearance. And that is the zahir, that is the apparent. Wal jamalul batil, and the spiritual beauty is that husnu sarira, that we have a good seerah. Seerah is a lifestyle, that when we talk to people, we talk in a good way. When we give advice to the people, we give the best advice. We do not backbite people. We do not lie. We do not show jealousy to the people for what we do not have. So therefore, it is necessary to have the purification of the hearts in order to have the spiritual adornment. And this spiritual adornment comes with the purification. The more purified someone is, the more adorned, he has adorned himself spiritually more if he has this purification, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
U.S. police stole the life of another black man, Kenan Anderson. A 35-year-old father and schoolteacher. That day, Kenan was in a minor traffic accident in Venice, California. He asked the police for help, but was treated like a criminal. Kenan was chased, held face down on the asphalt, and tased several times by the Los Angeles Police Department, LAPD, as he begged for his life. He went into cardiac arrest and died. The release of body cam footage a couple of weeks later prompted a furious reaction on social media. Comedian Travon Free called for the LAPD to be held accountable at all costs in a viral post on Twitter. The LAPD murdered Kenan Anderson, a beloved high school English teacher and father who flagged them down for help after a car accident. He was a threat to no one. He needed help and it cost him his life. Like many of the incidents with police killings, the footage reveals an utter lack of regard for addressing the ingrained disenfranchisement of black Americans.
I think it's part of a bigger problem that we've had in this country for centuries, right? I mean, our country has a sad founding in slavery. And, you know, when we moved away from slavery as a country, you know, the way we did that in part was by people saying, okay, well, now we're just going to police these minority groups harder. Right. So slavery doesn't exist, but we're going to make their lives harder through the laws, through Jim Crow laws. And we're going to police them hard. And we're going to make sure that minorities aren't really treated as equals in this country. And so I think what you're seeing today is still just a part of that, a part of really unfair policing in our country of minorities that's existed for centuries.
Anderson was a cousin of Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors. In the wake of his death, Cullors wrote, "Kenan deserves to be alive right now. His child deserves to be raised by his father. Kenan, we will fight for you and for all of our loved ones impacted by state violence." Los Angeles Police Department is now pushing a narrative that Kenan Anderson is responsible for his own death. Preliminary toxicology tests performed in Anderson's body by the police department itself have found traces of cannabinoids and cocaine metabolite in his system, results that in no way diminish the extreme violence inflicted on Anderson by the police. The idea that drug possession or use by black people creates grounds enough to warrant police violence, even deadly violence, has marked half a century of U.S. policing. Cops from the department that murdered George Floyd attempted to blame his death on the fentanyl found present in his system, too.
You also learn, ladies and gentlemen, that George Floyd struggled with an opioid addiction. He struggled with it for years. You will learn that he did not die from a drug overdose. He did not die from an opioid overdose. We're going to ask at the end of this case that you find Mr. Chauvin guilty for his excessive use of force against George Floyd that was an assault that contributed to taking his life, and for engaging in imminently dangerous behavior, putting the knee on the neck, the knee on the back, for 9 minutes and 29 seconds without regard for Mr. Floyd's life. We're going to ask that you find him guilty of murder in the second degree, murder in the third degree, and second degree manslaughter.
In the words of Melanie Okoa, Director of Police Practices at the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, LAPD's disclosure of information about incidents in which its officers kill people are public relations actions. They're not a public information service. The fact that the LAPD is deploying this public relations tactic almost 3 years after George Floyd's death is a grim reminder of how little has changed.
That this pattern of race-based policing is caused primarily by an organizational culture that can be described in three ways. First, flawed training, which emphasized a paramilitary approach to policing. Second, deficient accountability systems that are designed to not hold officers accountable for misconduct and therefore fail to hold officers accountable for misconduct. And lastly, former and current city and MPD leaders who have not collectively acted with the urgency, coordination, and intentionality necessary to address racial disparities in policing, to improve public safety, and increase community trust.
In a paper published in the science journal Neuron in 2020, Carl Hart, a professor of psychology at Columbia University, who researches drug addiction, said the exaggeration of the negative impacts of recreational drug use have been used to justify police brutality against black people. Kenan Anderson's death was a tragedy on many levels. He was one of America's few black male teachers. Only 7% of America's teachers are black, and less than 2% are black men. Meanwhile, studies have shown the racial disparities in U.S. policing. Despite making up less than 14% of the population, black people are three times more likely than white people to die at the hands of the police. This situation creates a life-or-death lottery whenever black people encounter the police. In 2022, police killed 1,176 people, more killings in any of the last 10 years.
I think it is feeling, not only feeling, it is getting worse every time because of the toxic politics, the rhetoric from Washington, from the White House, from the Capitol Hill about the very existence. I remember that during President Trump's presidency, there were a lot of discussions about these racially charged issues, and they basically dismissed that, and that exasperated the issue, the disagreements. Mm. And Biden, President Biden, promised to tackle that, but I have not seen any meaningful measures, at least on the national level, to tackle this.
The reality of U.S. policing persists as a shameless and reform-resistant threat to black lives. The uprisings that followed Floyd's murder were met with harsh state repression in the streets, and calls to defund the police were derided as delusional. Police budgets have further swelled, and impunity has remained almost unconditional. According to U.S. civil rights activist Bishop Talbert Swan, the cold and callous way black life is handled by those sworn to protect and serve is indicative of the staying power of white supremacy and systemic racism, which is the foundation of these yet-to-be United States.
I really feel disrespected, to be honest with you. I think that the Speaker of the City Council, Corey Johnson, and the mayor believe that Perhaps we don't have the intellect to be able to tell the difference between accounting tricks and actually defunding the police. We asked for defunding the police because we understand that police do not make black communities safe, and we wanted more funding for the programs that that do make us safe.
Keenan was one of the three men of color who lost their lives in early January following unnecessarily violent encounters with the Los Angeles Police Department. Two of the men, Takar Smith and Oscar Sanchez, were fatally shot. Moreover, Keenan Anderson's death has exposed the post-George Floyd frauds. Polling in early September 2020 showed many Americans, particularly white Americans, support for the Black Lives Matter movement receded just 3 months after Floyd's murder, with a majority opposed to the movement for racial justice. In the aftermath of George Floyd's death, millions of Americans poured to the streets, giving impetus to the Black Lives Matter movement. But now, 3 years after, Black Americans are still desperately trying to forge a consensus on how to stop the senseless, unprovoked violence of police officers. While it's a new year, Black people are already feeling the sting of the same racist tactics repeatedly deployed by U.S. police.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new survey has found that energy rationing has harmed Britain's health. According to this research, poor families used extreme heating methods that compromised their well-being and safety. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to the UK government's advisory body committee on fuel poverty, amid soaring energy prices and growing fuel poverty, UK households rationed heat this past winter, which resulted in 57% of those rationing heat suffering from deteriorating health and well-being. Last winter, energy use was massively rationed across the UK. According to Citizens Advice, in 2022, the number of people unable to top up their repayment meter was more than the previous 10 years combined. The committee, sponsored by the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero, said, as a result, alternative heating strategies such as the use of electric blankets and hot water bottles spiked in popularity. The committee said, in the research, which was conducted by London Economics Limited, the cost of living crisis and concurrent increases in energy costs has led to a substantial increase in the number of households in areas on energy bills, both in gas and electricity. So many people resorted to rationing energy in the UK, and 57% of those rationing fuel, equal to 34% of all adults in the UK, saw negative health and well-being consequences. For older people, 800,000 of over 60s left their homes in January 2023 to stay warm elsewhere. The research showed, of consumers who used less electricity and gas in the winter of 2022 to 2023, who were 60% of adults, 43% were using a tumble dryer less often, and 42% were using washing machine less often, the research found. To alleviate the effects of the cost of living crisis, some fuel-poor households have resorted to more extreme coping strategies to ration their energy use, compromising their health, well-being, and in some cases safety, the committee said in the report. Many households in other countries also struggled to cope with the energy crisis. Just ahead of 2022 to 2023 winter, Germany's insurance industry warned consumers against dangerous experiments to heat amid soaring energy prices. The insurers are concerned that the risk of fire is rising with the use of candles, too many electric heaters, or makeshift fireplaces. Meanwhile, RT reported growing fuel poverty amid surging energy prices forced many households in the UK to resort to energy rationing over the winter, compromising their health and well-being, the government-sponsored Committee on Fuel Poverty said in its report published recently. According to the study, many households could not afford to heat their homes sufficiently in winter, which led to massive rationing across the UK. To stay warm and save energy, people used improvised fuels such as clothes, books, and waste, as well as alternative means of light such as candles, the report revealed. The number of people unable to top up their repayment meters in 2022 was higher than in the previous 10 years combined, as some fuel-poor families self-disconnected, letting energy meters run out, according to the research. The report said the cost of living crisis and concurrent increases in energy costs has led to a substantial increase in the number of households in areas on energy bills, both in gas and electricity. The study added some fuel-poor households have resorted to more extreme coping strategies to ration their energy use, compromising their health, well-being, and in some cases, safety. As a result, 57% of adults who reported having used less fuel felt that having no cutback on heating their home affected their health and well-being, researchers wrote. The report also found out that about 800,000 elderly people across the UK left their homes in January 2023 to stay warm elsewhere. Some 60% of adults used less electricity and gas over the past winter, with 43% of those surveyed cutting down on the use of a tumble dryer and 42% using their washing machines less often, the research found. Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Over